Yes, this is page 126. This is a piece about Purim. And it's called Nes Nistar, because Purim obviously is the holiday of the hidden miracle, being that in the Megillah is a tremendous miracle, but yet we don't see anything too obvious, anything too open about the miracle, which is there nothing supernatural actually occurs. There's no Kriyas Yamsuf, and there's no man falling, and there's no Makos. But yet it's a Nes, which is on par with the other Nesim in Tanakh. So that's the Nes Nistar. So he says here in the first paragraph, brings an interesting Gemara. It says, Isra Gemara, Vika Haman es halavush v'sasus. So the Gemara brings the pasuk from the Megillah that Haman took the clothing and the horse. This is after Haman's told by Achashverosh to reward Mordechai for saving his life. So Achashverosh tells Haman, you be the one to actually give the reward to Mordechai. You take my royal garments, you take my royal horse, and you go and dress Mordechai and lead him around on the sus, on the horse. Also, so the Gemara elaborates on the story. Azul Vashkechei Diyasvi Rabbanin Kameh, the Haman went, and he found that the Rabbanin were sitting in front of Mordechai. Umechavi L'Huchos Kamitza. Mordechai was teaching them about the laws of Kamitza. Kamitza is what they do with the flour korbanos. They would take a little handful of flour, put on the Mizbeach. So he was discussing the laws of Kamitza. The reason for that, he brings here in parentheses, is because the date of this story is the second day of Pesach. People forget that the story of the Megillah occurred mostly in Pesach. People don't make those connections all the time. But we know that the decree made by Haman was made on Yud Gimel. When he drew the lots, it was Yud Gimel Nisan. They found out about it. They fasted over the Seder. They actually didn't eat matzah and marah that year. And Haman was killed the second day of Pesach. So you actually have the story of Purim occurring on Pesach. People just don't put that together, but it's very clear in the Megillah about the dates. So this was day two of Pesach. Day two of Pesach is the day of the Karban Omer. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, on the second day of Pesach, it was not Yontif, it was Chol Moed in Eretz Yisrael. They would offer the Karban Omer, a barley offering, and that is what allowed us to eat the new grains of the year. So Mordechai, being that it was day two of Pesach, was teaching the Rabbanan about the laws of this carbon, about kemitza, about taking in a handful of flour and putting them in his beach. Came in the chazi Mordechai to Afik Likibloi. Mirsus. So Mordechai sees Haman entering the Beis Medrash, and he gets terrified. Imagine that feeling. Lamek the Lavshikasi. Mordechai thought, he's coming to kill me. This is it. Nisatif Mordechai v'kam le'lutzuzo. So Mordechai put on his talus and started davening. So Amar Lahu b'mayaski. So Haman said to Mordechai, "What are you involved in over here? What are you doing?" Amrulei. So Mordechai. So the Rabbanan explained to Haman, "Bizman shbeis mikdash kayim, mandemindev mincha, ma'isim lukumsa desolsa miskaper." They said when the Beis Mikdash stood, if you donated flour to the Beis Mikdash, you would take a komets full, a handful of flour, and that would atone for you. Amar Lahu, Asim lo kumsa de sosa didchu. So Haman said to the Rabbanin, your little handful of flour has come, v'dachi yud alfei kikri kesef duwi, and it's pushed aside my tens of thousands of silver, of silver coins they offer for the Jews. We know that Haman came to Achashverosh and he said, I'll pay you tens of thousands of silver coins for the Jews. Achashverosh turned around and said, no, you keep the money, you kill the Jews anyways. But Haman was willing to offer, this is a lot of money, 10,000 silver kikarim, it's a weight of silver, a lot of silver, in order to kill Klal Yisrael. So Haman said, I see that I'm here now to reward Mordechai, my plans have been turned over against me, so I see that your little handful of flour must be stronger than all my money I gave to Achashverosh. And the Medrash says that one should never see the mitzvah of the Karban Omer as a light mitzvah. Because this mitzvah stood for us in the days of Haman. There's a schus of the Karban Omer, which actually stood in our behalf, gave us a schus in Haman's days. So you have to understand, what exactly is the connection between the Omer and Purim? I mean, it's a very strange connection. So it happened to be this occurred on the day of the Karban. But there's no happenstance. Nothing's a coincidence. Obviously, the Hashem orchestrated Min HaShemayim, these two things should coincide. So what's the idea? Why is the Karban Omer connected with the story of Haman? Just because the story of Haman occurred on the day of the Omer, we should be saved? The Maral writes, this is actually a very deep idea. Very profound. We'll explain it a little bit now. So the big question he's trying to explain is what's the connection between the Karban Omer and Purim? And again, the point being that the Purim occurred, the death of Haman occurred on the day of the Karban Omer, and Haman even actually noted this. Haman pointed out, this study that you guys are doing of the Karban Omer is coming and pushing me away. So how do we understand that? What exactly is that connection? So I'm going to skip down to the bottom paragraph here. I'll summarize the middle paragraph just for time's sake. He quotes here from the Rambam, and the Rambam discusses the importance of Nisim. And the Rambam says that ultimately, the purpose of a Nes, the Rambam says a very famous thing. He says that no one believes based on Nisim, meaning that a Nes is not makes you into a Maimon. Your belief in Hashem can't be based on a Nes. We know that because we see at we see many times that people were shown Nisim and still denied Hashem. We see Klai Yisrael still did the Eagles of even standing there Har Sinai. Nisim are not something we base our faith on. He says that the reason we trust Moshe Rabbeinu is not because he did any Nisim for us. Why do we trust Moshe with the authority to command us in Torah? It's not because he split the sea or brought down the man or did the Makos. It's only because we saw Hashem speak to Moshe face-to-face, Kevayachol. We heard Hashem speak to Moshe and say, Moshe, go and command the Jews of this mitzvah. If not for that face-to-face confrontation with Hashem, as it were, talking to Moshe, then we couldn't base our belief on the miracles he does. And the logic really is, just because you could do a miracle, it doesn't give you the right to command me in God's mitzvah. So they're not really connected. If I came in right now, I made this table float. And then I told you, now I command you from here on out, you and your children and all your descendants should never eat tomatoes again. So you'd say, like, you know, it's kind of interesting, I made the table float. You might think I'm maybe a powerful or scary person, but it doesn't give me the authority to command you not to eat tomatoes. It doesn't, you might be scared I'll make you float too, but it's not a command that has any sort of credibility. It's a fear of a powerful person. Moshe Rabbeinu became the mitzvah. He became the Nosin HaTorah to us. Moshe gives us the Torah, and he has the authority to command us in Torah. And where's that from? Not the miracles, the Rambam says, but because we heard Hashem tell Moshe to do this. If Hashem tells Moshe, go and command the Jews, now Moshe has the authority to command the Jews. That's where it comes from. But the point that Rav Dessler is bringing out from this is that Emunah is not based on miracles. It's the other way around. If you already have Emunah, and you see miracles, the Emunah becomes stronger. But if you have no Emunah, miracles are not going to become a basis of Emunah. So skip down to the bottom paragraph. Amlam gam l'sharbnei adam maram nisim. Hashem does show miracles to people. El shem t'munim besoch zeh, asher yikru lo teva. I mean, most people don't see open miracles. But we see miracles which are bound in nature. We see nis nister, hidden miracles. But nis nister is broken down into two categories. V'hem nis nistarim. V'hem bez gedarim. There's two categories of nis nister. It's very important for us to understand in life, because we see these miracles. These actually occur to us on a regular basis. What are these two different categories? Hagluyim shem nistarim, vanistarim shem nistarim. So one category is the exposed hidden miracle, and one category is the hidden miracle. So what does that mean? The exposed hidden and the hidden. So he gives examples. Hagolei sheben nistar, haynu shenira ban hagas Hashem yisbarach uvashkachaso, asher saviv sivos harbe. So the exposed hidden miracle is the following. That you see Hashem guiding events in life through cause and effect and bring you to a certain point. It's things we witness, we say, it must have been Hashkacha that I went to the right place at the right time, met the right person, and I chose to do this instead of that, and suddenly, whatever, I was saved from the plane wreck, or I found a job, or I found my long-lost friend I haven't seen in 25 years. But we say, you know, it wasn't a coincidence. Somehow Hashem ran those events and brought me there. Now, it's not supernatural. There's nothing had to happen against nature for that to actually occur. But it's miraculous, and it's open in the sense that you can actually connect the dots and draw the lines and see. This is what happened here. It was unusual. There's hashkacha involved. There's sibos, v'sibos. There's cause and effect. V'kulan tis amna tachos achas, but they all come to one point. Achim estaber klal lomar mikramim. You can't say it's coincidence. Just like when you have pieces of machine coming together, it's not coincidence. I mean, the fact that this screw goes there and this nail goes there and this nut goes over there and the machine works, somebody had to put the pieces together. They don't fall randomly into shape to become a machine. So events in life also don't fall randomly into place. Hashem guides them, and often we can see that. I'll share with you, I can't resist, a story happened to me just this Shabbos. It's a little thing, but it was very clearly, I think, hashkacha. On Thursday night, we were getting ready for Shabbos, and my wife pointed out, there's like way too much schnitzel here. She said, okay, there's a lot of schnitzel, we'll eat it, we'll freeze it, whatever it is. But there was just too, we just made too much, we don't know why, we made too much schnitzel. I happened to know on Shabbos, a lot of the boys in Yeshiva were away that Shabbos. So I said to my wife Shabbos morning, I said, you know, if there's like two or three guys eating Yeshiva, I'll invite them back to our house. Why should I leave two guys in the dining room? Like, I'll bring them home. So I get to Yeshiva, and it turned out there was like four or five guys sitting there. I said, why don't you come to our house for the Suda? And we didn't prepare in advance for these guests. But I said, we'll figure it out. So I said to them, you know, bring the Yeshiva's deli roll with you, and then we'll bring that home, and then we'll have that extra food, and that'll add to the meal, and there'll be enough food for everybody. And they said, what about the cholent in Yeshiva? I said, leave it on for Shavuot Shudas, because no one's, if you take it off now, it's going to go in the garbage. So leave it on, and we do Shavuot Shudas. So they said, great. So I brought home five extra guests to my house, but unannounced. And so we got there, and we took out the deli roll. It's burnt to a crisp. The Bachar in Yeshiva, for the first time, he decided to leave it in the warmer the entire night. So the warmer is supposed to be in a low temperature, didn't really work, whatever. It was a rock. So we couldn't eat the deli roll. But somehow we had enough food at the meal, and we said, wow, it was an ace. Then there's extra schnitzel here, and there's plenty of food. That was the first part of the story. And my wife said afterwards, it's an ace that we fed everybody. Had five extra guests that come in unannounced, and we had enough food for everybody. We only cooked for the family. We didn't cook for so many guests. So then we get back to Yeshiva, and it's Shavuot Shudas time, and it turns out that they had forgotten this week to buy the food for Shavuot Shudas. So there was no tuna, and there was no grapes, and there was no guacamole. All things they should buy, they didn't have. But there was a cholin. And the cholin was there, and they ate the cholin. And then the schnitzel that was meant for lunch, they took out, and they realized also was burnt to a crisp. So had the guy stayed in Yeshiva, they would have had no schnitzel, no deli roll, and they've eaten the cholin, and then no Shavuot Shudas. So everyone would have complained about there's no food for lunch, and there's no food for Shavuot Shudas either. But instead, it turned out they came to my house, there's plenty of food, and they cholin for Shavuot Shudas. So I said, look, it's a Golui Shivanister. You know, we didn't plan for that, but somehow all the Shabbos meals worked out, and there's plenty of food for everybody, despite all these different, errors that were made throughout the preparing for Shabbos this week in Yeshiva. So Baruch Hashem worked out. But this is something I would call a Golui Shivanister. You see just a bunch of little events coming together and saying, hey, that worked out. Something worked out over here, and Hashem made sure that everyone had food to eat for Shabbos. So when we see events coming together in life, and to us it's a chiddush, it's like a surprise what happened, we weren't expecting it. We see the wonders of Hashem occurring in front of our eyes. And even though it's all natural, nothing happens supernatural. There's nothing which defies the laws of nature in such a story. But yet, the Hashem being revealed at that moment is very clear. So that's called Golui Shivanister. And everyone in life experiences times that, like, you know, things just kind of came together and, like, worked. You can't figure out how, but it did. And that's called Golui Shivanister. Avon Nister Shivanister, there's a second level of a Nes Nister. It's called the hidden in the hidden. Hainu advarim hanikraim tivim. We call these things nature. She called Hurgal Nubem Harbe. There's no chiddush to us in nature. It's things that we're very accustomed to. You wake up in the morning, and the sun's shining, and there's air to breathe, and you know, etc., and there's gravity holding you down so you don't float away. Fruits grow on trees, and the trees, you know, give us oxygen, and they cleanse the air, and instead of the worms dig the holes in the ground, that loosens the dirt so then that the seeds can grow. I mean, all these things happening are just nature. We don't make much of it, but because we're used to it. But that's also a nace. Nature is fully a nace. We call it a nister shivnister. It's a hidden in the hidden, because it's so hidden you don't even look at it as a nace anymore. The Golui Shivanister you actually recognize after the fact as a nace. And the Nister Shivanister you don't even recognize as a nace unless you really are very perceptive. He says that Ein Mashi Yorarenu, nothing about it really arouses us, inspires us. Nis Nister Menu Lugamri, the nace is totally hidden. Umisha Roa Yad Hashem Gam Nister Shivanister, but if you're able to perceive Hashem's hand, even in the hidden, the Nister Shivanister, Zocha Shiyaru Lomina Golui Shivanister, at that point, you will be Zocha that Hashem will show you open miracles. I mean, the more you perceive the smaller miracles, Hashem will help you perceive the bigger miracles. Manchayucha L'chazik Bazes Emunaso. And this all creates for us a chizik in our Amunah, like we said before. You don't build Amunah on miracles, but you strengthen Amunah through miracles. Kemachu Roa Esa Nigla Shivanister. As I mavchim bevehirus od yoser shkufas ma'aseh Hashem, the more you see the galui, the exposed miracles that are hidden, as we said, the events coming together, you then learn how to see with more clarity Hashem's hand in the hidden shemister in nature. I mean, it's a cycle which feeds off itself. The more you recognize that nature is miraculous, you see more exposed miracles. The more you see more of the open miracles, you recognize more how nature is miraculous, and it goes back and forth. The kohu ola tamid basagasa vasashes barak bolamo hagoli megalo logamis anister kishmavchem mister zochel giyuim nosaf. And the more you recognize the hidden, the more you will be zochet to see the open miracles. And it's a cycle which is ongoing. So this is a big yisod in looking at life, because in life we do see miracles. No one can say they don't see miracles, because we do. We see hidden miracles. We see nature every single day, which is totally miraculous. And we see in life Hashem guiding the course of events. You have to be perceptive, you at least have to be aware to know it's Hashem doing it. And that's why we're saying that really Emuna is not built by miracles, but Emuna is strengthened by miracles. If you already have Emuna that Hashem runs the world, you can see His hand everywhere. If you don't believe that Hashem runs the world, then you can miss His hand, because you say it's just natural. I always point out how the world of science, for instance. So a scientist, which is an atheist, he can strengthen his atheism based on his science. Because look, the world is, you can explain the world, it runs on its own, everything can be explained with an equation. Who needs God? And the religious scientist says, becomes the deepest believer, because they can see the wisdom and the beauty of science as an expression of Hashem's the running of the world, Hashem's Hashkacha. And that person's emunah becomes deepened through the science. It's the same exact science, but either it deepens your emunah or makes you into more of an atheist than a heretic, depending on which way you look at it. So it's the same thing in life. You can't build emunah on these little miracles, but when you have emunah, you can spot Hashem in so many different places in your daily life, because you see miracles all around you. So how does this connect to the Omer? So the next paragraph. The idea of the Omer is to discern Hashem's hand in nature. I mean, this Karban Omer, which again, unfortunately, we don't bring. There's no Beis Hamikdash. The Karban Omer was one little handful of barley flour. And this handful of barley flour was what allowed us to eat Chadash. It made all the grains into Yashan. At that point, you could eat all the new grains in Eretz Yisrael. So the purpose of the Karban Omer, its meaning, what it represents, is to see Hashem's hand in nature. What's the source for that? So he says, I am Yalkut, look at the Yalkut, look at the Medrash, I'm a Rebbe. Rebbe says, so if someone buys a pound of meat from the market, so how much work is it to actually make that meat? And if you put it in their terms, when you buy the meat, you're koshering it yourself with the melicha, you're gathering in the wood, you're starting the fire in your oven. I mean, there's a lot to do to get that meat cooked. But yet, we go to sleep at night. Hashem, He brings the clouds, and He brings the rain, and He grows the crops. Dashas aperos, and He gives nutrients to the fruit. And all we give to Hashem in return is the Omer. I mean, so much of nature works on its own. So much grows on its own. We don't do anything. It just happens. And how do we repay Hashem for that? The Medrash says, the Karban Omer, that little handful of barley flour, that's how we repay it. So when you want to make something in your kitchen, it takes a lot of work. But if you think about it, 99% of the work has been done out in nature before it gets to your refrigerator. And that work was, even though, yes, there are farmers involved, but most of it's done by Hashem, who creates the earth, and who brings the sunlight, and who brings the rain. It's all Kodesh Baruch Hu. So what we do in return, so the Medrash says that the Omer represents our token of appreciation, of gratitude towards Hashem for making nature function. Amar of Pinchas, he brings another example. If you want to wash your clothing in the winter, in the rainy days, how difficult is it till it dries? And again, picture in their days what it means to wash clothing. Taking it, going down to the river, taking your board and scrubbing it, and wringing it out and scrubbing it again, and hanging out to dry, and it's rainy. It could take a week or two, it'll actually dry. It'll keep it raining on it. So it's a lot of work to wash clothing. But yet, everyone goes to sleep at night. The Kodesh Baruch Hu motzi mat ruach Hashem brings the wind. It dries out the land. So you want dry ground to walk on that's not muddy. Hashem dries it out pretty quickly. So again, it's the same idea that Hashem does so much in nature on his own with no input from the human being. Ubir Maharal, so the Maharal explains, Bizman Shalahayu Nisim Vinflos Ba'olam. When you're living in a time where there's no open miracles occurring, there's nothing supernatural occurring, the Omer comes to us as a symbol. It teaches us that Hashem runs nature, and nature doesn't run itself. So this means that when we can see Hashem's hand in the hidden, that's hidden in nature, the Nister Shemanister. Zachushi Galu Lifnam Segolish Minister. We are then Zochet to see Hashem running the world in a more open way. Umasik Sham, and that's why the Maral concludes over there. Mazad Tam Shem Megillah Lo Nimsa Shem Kado Shem Nimchak. In the Megillah, you don't find Hashem's name anywhere. Famous idea that there's nowhere in the Megillah that says Hashem's name. Not even a description of Hashem. Eno Nimchak means that it has Kedusha, that you can't erase it. So there's no way in the Megillah, there's nowhere the Megillah describes Hashem in any way that's open or clear. There's no names in there that have any Kedusha. We know that the word Melech in the Megillah is somewhat of a reference to Hashem, but the word Melech, it can be erased. It's a dual meaning, because it actually means Achashverosh in the simple meaning of the Megillah. Kilo Nira Vanhaga Zos Tivis Shmo Gadol Shmecharish Nisim, because the miracle of Purim doesn't show you anything about Hashem doing supernatural miracles. Rapa Remez Bilva Nizkar. Hashem is only alluded to in the Megillah through Ramazim, through hints. Hainu Shulhaya Nesa Zeh Namasocha Teva. That means because the Nesa of Purim was purely within nature. Shubasocha Nister. So the connection between Purim and the Omer is very obvious now. Purim is all about the idea of the hidden miracle, that Hashem runs the world and runs nature and runs history and runs our lives in a very hidden way, but a miraculous way. And the Omer is the karban that's meant to symbolize Hashem running nature. While we do nothing, Hashem takes care of everything around us. That's the Omer. So he describes here in a very interesting way to break it down. I never thought of it this way before. He says the Megillah really is three simultaneous stories all coinciding into one. I mean, there's actually three different, I don't know, strata of the Megillah which are occurring at the same time. But it's when all those events come together, that's when the miracle occurs. So look at the next paragraph. He explains, "Ad kama nisgalu hamgilui sheminister." Let's see how much of a revelation there is of Hashem's hand in a hidden way in the Megillah. "Nistakol na v'tamas hasibos hashonos Megillah." Let's look at all the different things coming together in the Megillah to create the cause and effect to create the miracle. So ishtalos hashonos. There's the first story in the Megillah. Again, there's going to be three separate stories that are occurring simultaneously. So the first line of cause and effect is Surus Achashverosh. Achashverosh is original party. Silk Vashti. Vashti being removed as queen and killed. Hamlochas Esther. Esther becoming the queen. Esther Ba Beis HaMelech. Esther enters the palace. Mazmina Haman L'mishta, and she invites Haman to a party. So basically there's one line of cause and effect in the Megillah, which is Esther's rise to royalty and Esther's power. It's Achashverosh making a party, removing Vashti, crowning Esther as queen, and Esther's ability to make parties in Achashverosh's house and inviting Haman to the party to join her. That was all Esther's power, Esther rising to royalty. That's story number one. Story number two, Ishtalshus Hashnia, Katzaf Bigsan Vaseresh. Bigsan and Seresh getting angry and plotting to assassinate Achashverosh. Giluyai de Mordechai, Mordechai uncovering the plot. Vatemer Esther Melch Meshem Mordechai. Esther telling Achashverosh that Mordechai uncovered this plot to save his life, and the king not falling asleep that night and wanting to reward Mordechai. So that's a separate story, could stand alone, independent story about an assassination plot, Achashverosh being saved, and Mordechai being rewarded. Separate story. So that's story number one is about Esther's rise to power. Number two is Mordechai's saving of the king's life. Story number three. Ishtachos Ashlishis, Hamelch Gido as Haman, Achashverosh promotes Haman. Karm Ishtachven lo, everyone bows down to Haman. Mordechai b'shar melch v'lo yichor l'ishtachven. Mordechai will not bow down, refuses. Ham ba'al melech l'slos is Mordechai. Haman comes to the king to hang Mordechai if not bowing down to him, and that's the third story. Again, that could be independent of the other two stories, a separate story. Some crazy guy is put into power. He wants everyone to bow down to him. No one does, and he wants to kill the people who don't bow down to him. So that's the third story. So all none of these stories on their own stand as miracles. Each one could be looked at as its own separate story. It could stand alone. When you put them all together, you end up with a tremendous nes. Sirif ishtaushivas beiz v'gimel osa laila v'sha'achas. The fact that story 2 and story 3, meaning Achashverosh's desire to reward Mordechai, and Esther, and Haman's desire to kill Mordechai, those coincided at one moment in Achashverosh's palace, that very night where Achashverosh couldn't sleep. And through that, the second story overturned the third story, through the first story. Meaning the second story of Achashverosh rewarding Mordechai overturned the third story of Haman wanting to kill Mordechai by means of Esther rose to power in the first story. So three separate stories, each one could be its own book, and they all come together at one night, in one moment, and created the Nes of Purim. Mamash kemechuna mechavenes b'sidur mirosh. It's mamash like a machine, a well-oiled machine. Everything coming together, working together as one. So it's an amazing thing. Really, life is like that. We don't have the ability in our own lives to trace each story occurring at once. But in our own lives, we have all these stories that do come together and bring us to a certain point in life where Hashem wants us. Let's get down to the bottom paragraph here. V'nafachu. So, that's the amazing story of the Megillah, which really is a nes nister. It's all these events just that happen to be coinciding, coming together to make a miracle. V'nafachu. So we have this concept of Purim. V'nafachu, everything becomes is opposite. It's flipped over. Od hatamas boletes me'od hu inyan v'nafachu. So let's look at this idea of v'nafachu. Shemishtalo b'silcha Megillah kula. Because the Nafachu was really, you see throughout the entire Megillah. Haman bikesh l'hashmes kol Yehudim. Haman wanted to destroy all the Jews. V'nafachu. Bo ba'yom hargu Yehudim es kol soneim. Rather than the Jews being killed on the day that they're supposed to be killed, it was the exact opposite. On that day they killed all their enemies, b'chom nis ha'melech, and all the different regions of the king. Haman bikesh l'slos es Mordechai. Haman wanted to hang Mordechai. V'nafachu. The day that Haman wanted to hang Mordechai, instead he was forced to lead Mordechai around on the horse, reward him. Haman prepared the gallows to kill Mordechai. That exact gallows he made to kill Mordechai, Haman was hanged on himself. So these things are the exact flip of what Haman was intending. Ram Ruzal, the Chazal teach us, Lemor lamelch listos is Mordechai oitz asher heichin lo. Tana lo heichin. I mean, the pasuk says that as Achashverosh was thinking to himself, what can I do to reward Mordechai? At that same exact moment, Haman's outside his door saying, I'm about to go in and tell the king to hang Mordechai on the gallows. And to me, that part of the Megillah is the biggest Purim joke. That moment, the irony which is there, the havachu which is there is amazing. But the wording used in the pasuk is l'sos Mordechai l'etz asher heichin lo, to hang him on the tree which he had prepared for him. So heichin lo in the simple reading goes back on Mordechai. The Haman prepared this gallows to hang Mordechai. But Tana, but the Gemara teaches that you could also look at it lo heichin. It was prepared for himself. I mean, Haman did not realize this, but when he prepared those gallows, he was preparing his own death. Pirush Maral, the Maral explains this point. Because this is what Haman's all about. Everything that Haman thought to do to Mordechai was flipped on its head. It was supposed to be put onto Mordechai. So the Maral says here a very interesting idea. He says that Haman's goal was to kill Klai Yisrael. But Klai Yisrael relies upon Hashem. Our existence is based on Hashem. So it's impossible. It's an impossibility to kill Klai Yisrael. It can't happen. It's against the laws of nature, as it were. Klai Yisrael cannot be destroyed. L'kachai nefach l'atzmo. So therefore, that's why it got flipped on its head. B'dolam mishu zorek v'koch gadol evan okir el kir barzel. The mashal would be, if you take a ball, you throw it hard against a wall, what happens? It goes right back at you. I mean, killing Klai Yisrael is a wall. Destroying Klai Yisrael is an impossibility. So Haman, what he was doing, was being tossed at a wall. So if you're throwing a ball at a wall, it's going to go right back at you. That's what happens. Hapil said, "Kir, try and knock the wall over." But yet the ball comes right back at the one who threw it. So that's the mashal, and we have to understand that's what's happening. Because when you try to do something impossible, all the energy has to go somewhere. So where does it go? The energy you put into it, it just goes right back at you. Because it can't go anywhere, because there's a wall in front of you. There's another point here. It's not just that it was flipped over on him, but all of his own downfall came through his own actions. He brought his own downfall. We didn't have to do anything. Siluk Vashti, v'shigarm l'malchus Esther. Who was the one who had Vashti removed, which allowed Esther to take the crown? Kamar Mazab Magar Megillah, Memuchan, Zahaman. The Gemara says it's Memuchan's idea to remove Vashti. And the Gemara tells us, it identifies Memuchan as Haman. So Haman himself was the one who told Achashverosh, "I think you should get rid of Vashti. You can't have queens that are so rebellious like that." So he is the one. So Haman put Esther into power. Achashverosh asked Haman, "What should I do to the man I want to honor?" And Haman's the one who paskined, "Well, I think you should bring out your royal garments, your royal horse, and lead him around on it." So he was forced to carry out himself his own personal decision of how to honor Mordechai. Like we said before, he himself prepared the gallows upon which he was hanged. We find him further in the Medrash. Kara oso rasha lavadav. V'amar lehem. But Haman had spoken to his servants, and he told his servants, "Bachruli etz gavoch mishim amah. I want you to choose for me a tree 50 amos tall, so that Mordechai will be seen dead throughout the entire country. I need a very tall, like 100 feet tall, a very tall gallows." Amrulo, hecha nimsa et shel nanama. So they said to Haman, "Well, where do we have such a big pole like this? There's no pole like this around, except for in your house. You have this huge mansion. I know so there are poles in your house that are 50 amos long." So immediately the servants went, v'hechriv achsadra shalov v'nalo. They actually demolished Haman's front entrance hall and took his pole. So Haman was hanged by a pole that came out of his own house. Misham v'yehu, madanav shalov, v'heshev lo v'gavriyov amar na'al locha etz. So they took the pole, and Haman, he measured himself on it, and Gavriel the Malach said, "Looks good for you. This is fit for you from Bereshis already." So the Malach, meaning that from the start, this was intended for Haman. It was never meant for Mordechai. It was lo heichin. It was meant for Haman the entire time. Haman didn't realize this. It was always for Haman. Nor of a nifla. Haman hechri v'chsadra shalo. It's incredible. Haman destroyed his own mansion. Man hotzi menu aseitz asher muchan hayam reshis abriya, to take out the tree, the pole, that was prepared from Bereshis for Haman to hang Haman on it. So Haman set himself up. This pole was there, ready for Bereshis to hang Haman on, and he went and took it out of his house and put it into the ground and got it all prepared to hang himself. Loza bilvan. And furthermore, abatsa madanaf sholov, he actually measured himself on it. Meaning he wanted to see what it would be like to hang on there, so he started measuring himself up to the pole. He wanted to have a dream of how Mordechai is going to look. So he went over there, he went up to the pole, and he saw Mordechai in his dreams. That's what it's going to be like. Not realizing what was going to happen was going to be him. The vision of himself was reality. That's what it was when he was hanged. Could this all be just coincidence? I mean, obviously all these events were exactly as Hashem had planned them, all coming together. So that's the amazing thing about the Megillah. It's not just cause and effect, but it's the nahafahu part of it. The hashkacha there is so intense and so clear that everything Haman does, you see going right back at him, and he himself sets himself up for his own death. So now we can talk about the idea of Pur. I mean, Purim is called Purim. It says Al Shem HaPur because of the lottery which Haman drew. It's a funny name for the Yontif, because that lottery seems to be just sort of like a really side detail, like a trivial part of the story. We could have called it Chag Esther, or Chag Mordechai, or Yeshua. I mean, there's so many names you could give to it. The fact that it was called Purim is an interesting thing. So what's the idea of Purim? Let's think about the idea of a Pur. Hagoro inenu novo mikra. So we think, what's the most random way to choose anything in life? A lottery. A raffle. You know, that's what he thinks the most random way to choose it. But Rav Dessler says no. A Goral is not...